Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the McCarthy Project live from Minnesota, where we have been attacking life and sports since 2001.
Good morning, this is Stephen McCarthy from the McCarthy Project, and we are coming to you from Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we have been attacking life and sports since 2001. And today we are going to be talking about the world of creative imagination and consciousness and some subjects that I don't think most athletes, most coaches even dare to even think about or even trying to get their kids to even think outside the box. I mean, we all like to say that we want our kids to think outside the box, but we don't realize that more than likely the things that they've learned in the past have caused them to stay inside the box, if that makes sense. And I have a great guest, John Rappaport, who I've listened to over the last couple of years. And I am totally looking forward. He has wrote tremendous amount of articles on nomorefakenews.com. And he has a logic class as well. And then he also has a thing called The Matrix Revealed, which I think is fantastic. John, how are you doing today?
Very good. Good to be here.
Good to be here. Thank you very much for coming on the show today. I am totally excited as far as to get your thoughts on how we can sort of break the lock, you know, open and start to teach kids to think in a different way, and not just say, okay, I need you to think a different way, I need you to think outside the box, but not give them any tools. And so I'd like to start out the conversation today, read a couple quotes from some of the articles that you've posted on your website, and then just give me your idea on how or what the concept kind of basics might be, and then we'll move into how it applies directly to young athletes from there.
Okay,
but you had
sure.
used the word art, you know, which is to say imagination is the path to enlightenment, an infinite voyage in which there is no final state. Contrary to every system, illumination is not received passively. It is literally created by each person. Like it or not, we are all artists. Now, that simple part right there will knock 90% of the kids out of the park because they don't ever look at themselves as artists from that standpoint. How do you view art, and I know that you have a great background in that. How do you view it, and what are kind of your thoughts related to that?
Well, I can go back to my own young years when I was an athlete, especially baseball pitching, and look back on it and see how I could have applied that thought then if, you know, somebody had kind of mentioned it to me. And it all has to do with imagining yourself doing what you do in sports, whatever that sport is, whatever that activity is, whether it's carrying a football, throwing a pass, you know, shooting three-pointers, pitching, hitting, whatever, in a number of different ways, seeing it, feeling it, not just in one way, but in a lot of different ways as a kind of experiment in imagination, because that loosens you up. It gives you more options. You see different possibilities. You're not locked into one, say in my case as a pitcher, one particular way at age 14 or 13 of throwing a baseball 60 feet, 6 inches to home plate with one motion, one windup, one whatever, one leg kick. Because when kids are learning how to play sports, they often don't realize that there's a lot of different ways to do the same thing, and depending upon their talent and their commitment and so forth, they get, you know, different results. And if I had played around with that in my imagination at that young age, I would have seen, for example, that I was throwing the ball all wrong in terms of developing power, accuracy, and consistency. That I was doing things with my body that were putting me in a kind of a hole, because I just didn't have the right kind of motion. Various people tried to teach me and say, you know, this is the way you have to do it, and so on and so forth. But of course, all you have to do is watch a few baseball games, major league games, and you see that pitchers have, you know, hundreds of different ways of delivering a baseball. But if a young kid were able to sit there and imagine lots of different ways to do that thing, or whatever it is, throw a football, shoot a basketball, he would begin to see how it relates to his body and what he's already doing and things that he might do to change that and make it better for him, make it more effective. It all starts with imagination. It starts with realizing that there's a lot of possibilities here. Take a batter's stance in the box. There's a million different ways to stand in the box. There isn't just one way. There isn't just one way to set yourself when the pitcher is going to throw the ball. There's lots of different ways. And in fact, finally, at about age 18, when I was playing freshman ball for a little while in college, I realized that standing in the batter's box was a significant thing for me, and that I was doing it in ways that were, causing me to not see the ball right and strike out and all of that. And I started to fool around with different ways of standing and imagining it. And I came upon one way of standing there where I was really ready to hit the ball and I could see everything the pitcher was doing. And all of a sudden, like magic, everything changed. But without being able to imagine it and feel it in a number of different ways, I would have been stuck. So that's just one kind of a clue about what kids can do to figure out how to approach a sport.
And do you feel that there's, you had mentioned that that would be one clue. Do you see a limit to that variable, if that makes sense?
No, I really don't. It as long as a person's willing to experiment and try different things, they're going to find out different things. What's best for them? What is most effective? What gives them the most power? What gives them the most speed? Et cetera, et cetera. And that's going to enable them to be much better than they already are without changing anything about their conditioning or their the fact that they, you know, practice and so forth and so on. This is all in the space of imagination. It's all being able to see these things. And, you know, sometimes you'll hear announcers talk about how a player was going to a sports psychologist, or a player will say that he was visualizing doing what he does and how it helps him in sports. Well, yeah, that's imagination. That's one way of doing it. If you were to stand in a room all alone and pretend there was a bat in your hand, and look out across the room and see a pitcher there who's going to deliver the ball, you know, right into you, and watch that pitcher in your mind's eye, in your imagination, watch him do every single thing he does, all the way to the release of the ball, you're going to discover that you can focus in much more closely, almost as if it's in slow motion, on every single thing that that pitcher does, including, yes, the release point and where the ball is coming from and what the spin on the ball looks like as it leaves his hand. That gives you a clue as to what kind of pitch it is. And you're doing all this in your imagination. And then when you get up to the plate, magically, you find out that you're a lot more ready than you were before, and some of the fear or nervousness starts to go away because you're not thinking about yourself. You've got all your attention focused out there on the pitcher, and that's because you did this, you know, imagination exercise. If you would stand in a room for 3 minutes a day all alone and imagine there's a bat in your hand and you're watching a pitcher come at you with a pitch, and see everything that that pitcher is doing, every single thing. Follow it all the way through. You're going to feel yourself relaxed. You're going to feel yourself be more ready, more prepared. And you're doing that like a rehearsal, all in your imagination. And it crosses over to the point where when you're actually out on the field there, you feel much more relaxed, much more comfortable, much more focused. And then the hand-eye coordination can really serve you as opposed to having conflict about it.
Let me just ask some specific questions that I think come about in you describing that process. So many people want to take the idea of science, you know, and apply it to something like an imagination drill or a three-minute drill like you're talking about. Where do you see science as, well, you need to have your leg exactly in this spot, you'll create 9% more power. You have your body like this, you'll have create 15% more power. In your understanding of science and understanding of success as an art, how do you view science in that respect?
Well, that's a really good question. A really good question. My overall answer to that is that science becomes a barrier and an impediment to achieving what you want to achieve. Because usually what happens in science is that the people break down everything into little separate pieces, whereas imagination sees the whole thing. So, I'll give you an example. One of the most admired pitchers in modern history, Tom Seaver, you know, was a guy that when he came up to the major leagues, I think he was 21 with the Mets, he had it all together right from the beginning. Not only did he have it all together, but he understood the mechanics of pitching for him in a way that few people ever had, to be able to relax, repeat the motion, generate tremendous amount of power. He studied the art of pitching, and he did break it down. Drop the back leg, you know, gives you more leverage to push forward, more force, more power. So to take the strain off of his arm and so on and put it on his legs, which are a lot stronger than your arm. But I have no doubt that he was able to put it together, all together as one motion, one pitching motion in his mind, in his imagination. He knew everything that he wanted to do as one piece. And the trouble with some instructors who rely on science is that they want to keep breaking things down into separate sections, but that's not how it works in life. It works as one thing. Yes, there are clues and information that can help a young person in the sport, absolutely. Like, for example, when you're pitching, you want to keep that front shoulder closed as long as possible and not open up your chest too soon or you're going to lose all your power. Sure, that's very helpful. But when you start imagining that and you're pitching that way and holding that shoulder closed, you can imagine the whole motion, everything that happens before it, after it, during it. And that's where imagination, to me, is king, because it develops the whole thing. In addition to that, I would add one more comment. I would say that in many cases, the scientific breakdown of what you do in a sport is not really true across the board. It might be true, some piece of information true for some people, but not necessarily for everybody. Certainly not. And you can look again at pitchers in baseball. Look at Randy Johnson and the crazy sidearm motion that he had. I mean, it didn't look like he was even putting his body into it. If you looked at it just kind of on the surface, you think, well, this guy could never last. I mean, he's just going to destroy his arm. And yet, look how long he pitched. It worked for him because he could see it working for him. It felt right. He could imagine pitching that way and getting the result that he wanted, and he got it. So some of these scientific breakdowns, like you said, well, if you do this with your leg, you're going to get 9% more power. Yes, that might be true for some people, but for other people, it doesn't hold true, and they can't do it that way. They don't feel comfortable doing it that way. They can generate their power some other way, and they do. So that's an important distinction between science and imagination.
And then to go one step, I didn't go one step further, but in the relationship of technology nowadays with so many kids, we've talked on the show previously where the amount of time people are sitting, you know, texting, you know, doing social media, doing a lot of these, you know, 140 character thoughts type stuff. How do you see that as it relates to creating an imagination and creating that development of that picture?
Well, I think it's sort of an obstruction because it diverts your attention away from full-blown imagination. You know, just imagining things. You take a kid, he's watching a movie, logs into Netflix, he's got it up on the screen, he's watching the movie. He's absorbed in this movie or a video game or whatever, but let's take a movie. Now, the thing that he doesn't really realize about the movie that he's watching is that the movie has absolutely no power. You know, it's just a bunch of images in a row with people talking and doing things. He's the one with his imagination that's making that movie come alive. Otherwise, it's just gibberish. But he doesn't know that. So his imagination sort of becomes sucked into the movie, and he's not really aware that he's using his imagination. But if you could sit him down or have himself sit himself down with a good novel and read it, now he's going to become aware sooner or later that he's imagining all kinds of things in these, you know, printed words on the page. He's supplying a tremendous amount of imagination. And you could, I mean, I've done that. I used to be a teacher, and I would say sometimes to students, so what happens when you read? You know, and we'd talk back and forth, and finally they would say or realize how much imagination they were putting into reading a book. And I'd say, well, did you ever think of using your imagination any other way besides that? Well, what do you mean? And we'd get into that kind of conversation. I'd find out what the kid was interested in. For example, I had a student who wanted to become a sound engineer for bands. And he knew the technical side of it pretty well, or he was learning about it, so I didn't have anything to add there. But I said to him, so how are you going to figure out, you know, how to record a band? He said, well, you know, I got all the equipment, this, that, and the other thing. I said, yeah, but I mean, do you think that's the whole story? He said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, what is the sound that you want the band to have, the overall sound? He was working with a band. He said, what do you, he, you know, he kind of paused and he started thinking about it. I said, do you see what I'm saying? If you can imagine the sound that you want, now you can go on onto your equipment and you can try to figure out a way to get it. Whereas if you're just fooling around with the technology, yeah, you might come up with something good, but is it going to be what you really want if you haven't imagined it in your mind and listened to it in your mind to hear the overall sound that you're looking for? And that gave him a really heavy clue, and he went back into the studio and started to approach his work in a whole different way. It wasn't just tinkering with equipment anymore.
See, and the thing that's interesting that I want to kind of move to next is you have a course on logic, and you're talking about the imagination. At first glance, those in our limited mind should not be congruent or in the same discussion. How do you tie logic with imagination?
Well, I do it this way. Everybody goes to school. Everybody goes online. Everybody reads information or hears information or watches information. Tons of it, more than ever. And how long do kids stay in school? Well, most kids stay in school for, you know, at least 12 years, some 16, some 20. That's a lot of time. That's a lot of effort. Now imagine going to school every day for that length of time and not having a clue about what you're doing. You're just like in a rowboat out in the middle of the ocean in a storm because you can't think straight. You don't know what thinking straight is. You don't know what reasoning is. You don't know what an argument is. You think an argument is two guys screaming at each other on the street, whereas originally the word meant a debate about something to reach the best conclusion. You can't follow a line of thought from A to B to C to D. You don't even know what that means. When you read an article, it's all just like separate little crazy pieces of information. You don't realize that the writer is trying to lead you up to a conclusion, a point. So if you arm a young person with logic so that they understand what that's all about and they can use it and as a very sharp tool, then all those years they spend, instead of being a confused jumble and a mess, becomes something that they can actually enjoy and dig their teeth into. And their mind is no longer a crazy clutter. It's got things straight. Now, if that mind is good and straight and true and clear, when you start to use imagination, even at a later age, 15, 20, 30, 40, you're going to have a clear field to do it in. You're not going to be sitting in the middle of a mud puddle trying to use your imagination because your education was a mess from beginning to end. So that's one really strong way in which these two things do, in fact, connect.
Do you see that, because I have also I'd like to enter into John Taylor Gatto and Richard Groves and all these guys that are that you've worked with, and they're talking about this idea that it becomes something that you can literally read more or understand more and do it in 25% of the time. And I know that's just a formula to throw out there, but is that possible if you get your mind straight like you're talking about and start to add the imagination? Do you see that as a possibility?
In some cases, with some material, definitely, no question about it. Because right away, let's say you're reading an article, you can see where the writer is going. And you can read quickly, so he goes there, and then he goes to here, right, I see that, and then he goes this way and that way, and that's it, that's what that was about. With other material that, let's say, is more thoughtful, where the argument from A to B to C to D to E to F, G, and so on, is more complex, you're going to want to spend more time with that and apply logic to it to really see if what the author is writing makes sense, is valid, or is it really, does it fall short of that? So the answer is yes in some cases, but in other cases, you really don't want to do that. You really want to dig in and see what's going on. Like if somebody were to say, America is going in the wrong direction. That's the title of an article, and it's 8 pages long. And whoever the author is obviously spent a lot of time thinking about this subject, and he's referring back to the history of the Constitution and what happened to take us off course from that, and what about modern civilization that really the founders back there in the 18th century had no clue about. How could they predict what was going to happen now? And, this is a complex argument, but it's important. It's interesting. You're going to want to sit down and relax and get into that because you're interested to see where he's going and you want to know if he's going to give you something that you can reach a conclusion about or whether you agree with him or disagree with him. So I don't think it's an across-the-board solution, to say 25% in all cases, but in some cases, absolutely.
So let's move over, because I have a second quote, and I would really like for you to kind of dig into the idea It's you had mentioned in a recent article called The Landscape of the Mind, said people are educated to believe that it takes special inborn talent to imagine and create. That is one incredibly destructive teaching. It stunts natural development to the point where passivity becomes the order of the day and of a life. So the question is, how does passivity come into this whole equation, and where does individualism come as well?
Well, passivity comes in because people, lots of people, believe that to be creative, you have to be born with some special talent. Like a kid who is 6 years old can draw a face that looks like a face, and you go, wow, that's very creative. He's got a terrific talent for that, and I can hardly draw an oval, so that means I have no talent, therefore I have no imagination, I can't create anything. That's horrendous. That is horrendous, because everybody has the inborn capacity to imagine. They have to exercise that capacity, like you would if you were going to the gym. And, you know, in one of my, you mentioned a collection that I have at No More Fake News called The Matrix Revealed. Well, there's another one called Exit from the Matrix, which is just filled from one end to the other with imagination exercises that I've developed over the years, different ways of using your imagination. And when you practice these exercises, practice using your imagination, you find, wow, especially a kid, especially somebody who's 6 years old or 7 years old, I mean, if they started doing some of these exercises, they would be, you know, just through the roof in their ability to imagine, create, and so forth. Where they create, where they decide to create, in what venue, what area, that's entirely up to them. But if you equip somebody by sort of waking them up to the fact that they have this power called imagination and that it is awesome, they'll figure out many areas where they want to use their imagination. And not just when they're 6 or 7, but when they're 40, 50, 60, that's not going to go away.
Now the last question I have for you, you kind of touched on in that last little segment there, but how, if you were a young athlete with what you know, what would you do to start to develop these tools in your tool belt so that you can go ahead and have a competitive advantage over everybody else on the field?
I would start with, what's the sport that I love the best, the one I really want to focus on? So let's say I decide, well, no question about it, basketball. Okay, and what is it that I really like to do the most in basketball? So let's suppose I say, shoot from the outside. Okay. So I'm right on the superhighway. That's the sport I want, love the best. That's what I love to do the best. Okay. Now I'm going to be imagining myself from all areas of the court, sinking three-pointers. And not just with one kind of robot-like motion, but I'm going to imagine myself doing it with all kinds of ways, shooting, you know, from holding the ball at my right shoulder, holding it over my head, holding it off to the side, stepping back and shooting, dribbling to the side, stopping and shooting, coming off a screen and shooting, you know, everything. And I'm going to keep seeing that and imagining it, and the ball's going in, and I'm seeing it, and I'm feeling it in my body as I'm imagining it. Yeah. And it's not just because I imagine the ball going in that I'm going to have that edge. It's because I'm imagining all the ways I could possibly shoot it and all the places I could shoot it from on the court. And now I'm going to begin to get into my real groove when I'm out on the court, and I'm going to find sort of the central way that I'm going to shoot all three-pointers. I'm going to find that for myself. I'm going to feel it because I've imagined all these different ways. And I'm going to be shooting, you know, 100, 200 jumpers, you know, in the gym, and then I'm going home and I'm imagining it some more, and I go back the next day and do it again. And pretty soon I'm going to find that instead of hitting 2 out of 10, I'm hitting 4 out of 10. And in practice, maybe I'm then, you know, going to up that even quite a bit. With nobody, you know, breathing down my neck, maybe I'm hitting 6 out of 10. I'm developing that. That's going to give me a tremendous edge. Tremendous edge.
Unbelievable. Well, anything else before I let you go for the day? I do want to thank you, first of all, for coming on the show. I think I think that was fantastic. Is there anything else that you could think of to kind of
No, I think that about sums it up. You know, it's once you begin to use your imagination, you realize you have an imagination. And the more you use it and in different ways, not just to see one thing over and over again, but the more you use it in different ways, the more you're going to realize, wow, I've got this ability. I can do this. And when you see it translate into results in your sport or in your life, that's just going to make you, you know, feel fantastic because you know it really works and you're going to keep doing it and you're going to be successful.
Cool. Well, thank you very much, John, for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
And for everybody that would like more information about it's called Exit the Matrix, and then the Matrix is revealed. He has a logic course. It's nomorefakenews.com. It's all spelled out. Tremendous, tremendous articles. I've been, like I mentioned, reading them for a couple of years, and I want to just encourage everybody to go to his website. So thank you very much, John.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.